Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to On Point. I'm Don Allen with my co-host of Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you on this fine Saturday afternoon or evening?
This afternoon, real good, Don. Real good. What's up?
We got a lot to talk about today. You know, the topic of today's story was we're looking into the.
Don, I'm having some problems with the reception. Your voice is kind of breaking up. I must be breaking up too.
Well, no, I actually hear you really good. Oh, really good.
Okay.
I am locked in here. So, is it a little bit better right now?
No, not from here. And you're breaking up. But yeah, some kind of adjustment needs to be made. But anyways, yeah, you're breaking up on my end. But anyways, let's go. What do we got, man? Looks like your mayor is on his way to South Carolina to make a rather interesting presentation on the future of North Minneapolis. Were you aware of that?
No, I was not aware of that.
Yeah. There's a redesign for North Minneapolis that has been in the works for quite some time. It's a part of the master plan that many of our so-called agency heads and others were apparently a part of. Mike Christensen and them have been carrying the ball. They brought in a redesign architect firm. And the mayor will be making a formal presentation in somewhere in South Carolina, probably Columbia or Hilton Head. A redesign for North Minneapolis. It's too bad that the community was not aware. The article broke this morning's edition of the paper, but we've been aware of it at the National Research Institute for a while. We were just wondering how Lewis King and them would ultimately reveal the fact that this plan is in place, and it's a part of the gentrification. Yeah, redesign plan. Maybe somebody will call in. Maybe some of the members of the core group of the so-called tornado recovery will call in and bring everybody up to speed.
Yeah.
There will be a formal presentation by the mayor in South Carolina in the middle part of next week at really the League of Cities. They're really high on it. It really talks in terms of a total reconfiguration of North Minneapolis and the black population. Yeah.
Do you think the people who are aware that are on the north side community responding, were they aware of this, do you think, Mr. Edwards?
I just said that. I just said that the response team, the core group, was aware of the redesign plan. There had been consultation and meetings at the Crown Mill Center in downtown Minneapolis. With respect to this, it was not known what the actual protocol or procedure was going to be to introduce this. It made sense that the mayor would introduce it 1,600 miles away. Star Tribune was sworn to secrecy, if you will. Others were clearly sworn to secrecy. They're clearly aware. Mm-hmm. That's why Mike Christensen and other city officials stopped coming to the meetings of the recovery committee.
Wow.
Couldn't take a chance that they'd be asked about this redesign plan, and it's a heck of a plan, according to what sources. I've had to go outside of Minnesota for sources. According to what sources are saying, this is quite an interesting plan. It configurates with my story in my column in the Spokesman Recorder in the second week in June, where I said that this was about gentrification. And there are certain sources outside of Minnesota that have been involved with the architects, designers of this plan. Yeah. The core group knew about it. Sure, they knew about it.
Oh, wow.
The way some of the money was being shifted around and how people were being discouraged from coming back, if you will. I'm amazed. I'm just fascinated that our legislative delegation here in North Minneapolis, including our federal congressman, you know, didn't give people kind of a heads up. But it's out now. The cat's out. I mean, if people could call in and say whatever they want to us on today's program, the fact of the matter is the Star Tribune received authorization to break the story. They broke it in this morning's edition of the paper, kind of buried it on the Metro section, but it's a big item. There's already been discussion about the bonding and insurance and et cetera that will go into the new enclaves, edifices, the whole thing, man. This is quite a redesigned plan that the mayor has put together. Maybe people will be able to call the mayor's office on Monday morning and before he leaves town for South Carolina, oops, and ask for an advanced copy. They will not receive it. I'm aware that the strategy developed by the players, including the Chamber of Commerce and others, it has basically been designed in such a way that the design plan will not be released to the general public until after certain arrangements have been made with the Ackerberg Group and others who will be a part of the new development in North Minneapolis. Yeah, yeah. For people to listen in right now, they run and get your morning paper or go online, Minneapolis Star Tribune. Mayor on his way for a formal presentation. Man, there are mayors in other cities and et cetera just breathless. The mayor has indicated this is how we're going to do it here. This is how we're going to make African Americans disappear.
That's what it is. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what it is. So, Don, I understand you got some stuff, man. Why don't you lay it out, man? I understand you had asked some questions of the Minneapolis Foundation, who also is a party to this, by the way. Minneapolis Foundation was aware of the design plan, made recommendations, participated in the design program. Whoops. But I understand that you have raised some specific questions to the Minneapolis Foundation. Man, why don't you go ahead and lay it out, man?
Yeah, that's what I did.
By the way, why don't we give the number, Don? Why don't you give the number
sure.
In case anybody wants to call in and dispute it or challenge us or et cetera. Why don't you give the call-in number?
That number is area code 877, toll-free actually, 877-572-4288. Call in at 877-572-4288. Well, Mr. Edwards, you know, on Thursday I received a call. Actually, let me start at the beginning. On Tuesday of this week, I sent an email to the chairman of the Northside Community Response Team asking him some very specific questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I received an email back that said I should crawl under a rock and dismissed my question. Then, you know, being a military man, I put in a word to the Minneapolis Foundation, got a call back, and I asked the Minneapolis Foundation five, you know, pinpointed questions, maybe six. The first one is, who did the Northside Market or the Northside Community Release Response Team, NCRT, who did they serve?
Mm-hmm.
Second question was, were the lives of the people that they served better now than before the tornado? Number three, if any, who cuts the checks and why has it taken 17 weeks, almost a little bit more, 4 months for the money to get through the agency in the
city? Okay.
And the fourth one here was,
Don, you know, I'm really having a hard time hearing you now. You're breaking up quite a bit. Maybe make some adjustment there in your studio.
Okay,
understand. Yeah, I mean, I've already been privy to it, but I can't really hear you. I mean, you're breaking up. But go ahead.
Okay, this should be a little bit better right here, and I am trying.
That sounds better right now. There, it sounds better right now. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, and the fourth question that I asked was, you know, who received money directly after the tornado all the way up to the first letting of the second grant, and what organizations and what individuals. And so with those questions asked, Mr. Edwards, of course I got no reply. I am wait on a report that should be released sometime in the middle of the month. And it's still unclear exactly where the money is going, whose pocket it's going to, but we know that one thing, that if the three big agencies, the Neighborhood Hub, Pillsbury United Communities, and Shiloh, who have navigators, did not get that $117,000 yet, how are the victims of the tornado being serviced as far as human needs? So that's a big question.
Well, let me just ask this question also, Don, because I was in a meeting with Louis King a month ago, and one of the things Louis King said, they would not be getting $39,000 apiece. They'd be getting at best $13,000. He had made that executive decision. And then my question I'd have to ask is, who was paying people like Ms. Thomas over at Shiloh, Gary, Jerry Moore at Hub, and whoever it was over who was paying them prior to the 22nd of May? Because all of them have testified or given statements inside the committee that they were hard at work long before the tornado. So did their funding run out, or, I mean, does anyone know? Can anybody tell us?
Yeah, I mean, I asked quite a few people. I kind of bounced around and asked some folks, you know, where was the funding? Now, Bruce Bork, who's with the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches, did send me an email, said that he would be sending out some checks on this past Friday. Was not specific in who he was sending checks out to or for what amount, but he would be sending out some checks. So that turned into
Let me ask this question, Don. Keep, you know, try to get our audience involved here. Is Bruce Bork and the Greater Council of Churches, are they the controllers and fiscal agents for both the long and short term, or just the short term?
From what I understand, the fiduciary agreement or the memorandum of understanding that was signed by all the agencies, it goes to December 2011, which is the end of the first granting period, according to the Minneapolis.
So the Greater Council of Churches is the fiduciary agent or fiscal agent only for the so-called short-term plan. The remaining 24 months will be under the control of who? King decided on who that will be?
No, it has not come to the top of mind yet with anybody. It's unusual for this advanced planning, because I know, Mr. Edwards, we both sat in the meeting where they asked, we're talking about this is a 36-month, $5 million possibly fundraising, and that they were to move ahead, that this was a marathon, not a sprint, and all this other stuff. So it's kind of interesting for them.
Well, let me just say on that, but I mean, man, you're really on point. But that particular philosophy and doctrine, that really wasn't developed by Louis King. That was developed by the movers and shakers who had put together the design program, because this is reflected in a document issued on the 6th of July, 2011, in which the Minneapolis Foundation indicated short and long-term expectations. So these folks have known for a long time that the long-term plan is the design plan that the mayor will introduce in South Carolina.
Yes.
Wow. Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry. Because you've got a couple other excellent points that you raised there in your five-point inquiry. And I'm sorry, I apologize for interrupting you. Why don't you just go ahead and continue?
Well, yeah. You know, it was kind of curious to me that, you know, we can't get any information. And when you ask questions, you know, the chairman of the Northside Community Response Team dismisses you as not taking any medication this particular morning you asked the question, and that you might have some type of mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so this, you know, as a citizen, as someone who had friends who and people that they know personally to actually contribute to GiveMN.org, which was the Northside Tornado Relief Fund set up by the Minneapolis Foundation, questions have come to me as someone who have went to almost every meeting until I was banned last week from further meetings.
That's right. You've been exiled, extricated, banished, if I'm not mistaken.
I've been banned from a public meeting using public funds in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how strange, how ironic is that? But with that said, you know, Mr. Edwards, people that I know personally, business people have called and said, hey, you need to find out what's going on. You know, based on your word, I donated $25. I donated $100. I donated $150. So that prompted me, Mr. Edwards, to start the call-in campaign via Facebook to have my friends and other people call the Minneapolis Foundation to ask them where the money's at. And so people are calling. That goes through the 16th. That anybody that's interested in calling, just ask, because we have to shake the tree and make the low-hanging fruit fall off. One thing that, I mean, I'm not upset with the Minneapolis Foundation raising the money and giving it away, but I'm upset with them bringing the bully to the playground, Mr. King in this case, because if we can't get answers to questions regarding the tornado funds and why victims in North Minneapolis did not receive a nickel, one green piece of paper, then we have some serious challenges.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I can't concur about letting the Minneapolis Foundation off the hook, and the reason is I'm looking at too much documentation that shows the Minneapolis Foundation had a lot more knowledge about the preparation for the design plan of the future, the gentrification, et cetera. But, you know, I mean, to each person their opinion. But as I continue to take a look at documentation, it's quite clear. Example, let me give you a quick example, Don, for our listening audience. The actual formation, if you will, and structure of the Northside Recovery Committee was actually put in place on the afternoon of the 26th of May. A communique was sent. Mr. King was given, actually he was given a chart, which the purpose was to indicate who would be in what role. In fact, the only committee that they initially had not assigned for that game, for that dog and pony show you and I were at on the morning and afternoon of the 27th, was mental health.
Yes.
Yeah. And so our I don't know if you were ever aware of it, if the Minneapolis Foundation in your discussions with them had pointed out they already knew that a plan was in place. In fact, just to be specific, you know, in case Louie or somebody wants to call in, the document was floated and sent to the significant principals at approximately 3 p.m. on the 26th of May, 2011. Communications, organizational needs assessment, human needs, patching scrubs, bush removal. Boy, you and I sure remember that whole thing about Thor Construction and them, because you and I were in a meeting on the 9th of June of this year when they were saying to black contractors that everybody was coming out of their pocket, and those guys had already gone through $206,000. I'm talking about Norman and Thor and them. Yeah, you still there? Hello? I lost Don. I assume we're still on.
Yes, we are still on, Mr. Edwards.
Okay, the document I'm talking about is a document that was forwarded to what was the actual core element of the so-called Northside Community Response Team. It was communicated at 3 p.m. on the 26th of May. It laid out the entire structure. It designated who would actually be on the committee. Remember, Don, in that meeting on the afternoon of the 27th at the Urban League, that Louis went to great lengths to make it appear that these were bright ideas coming from his own mind, and
yeah,
he was actually working off a document that had been sent to him on the previous day.
Exactly. But, you know, Edwards, also, we have to look at the role of the Lutheran Social Services. I happened to run into the woman who was doing that presentation at UBOC in the very beginning. And I can't remember her name right off, and I apologize.
Well, let me give you the name, Don. You're talking in terms of Nancy Bars.
Thank you.
BERS, Lutheran Social Services. That's who you're talking about, right?
Yes,
Nancy.
Exactly. And
she's the woman that developed the plan that was community-oriented. That plan was ultimately aborted by city officials because they knew they were coming up with a design plan. But go ahead. I cut you off. Nancy said what? What did Ms. Barnes say?
She was being very diplomatic, but I got the sense, Mr. Edwards, that they are not happy with the current state of tornado recovery. Now, you're talking about a group of people, Lutheran Social Services, that are experts in disaster relief, recovery, and rebuilding.
Right, right.
And so what has happened is this whole tornado recovery and all this nonsense has been kicked over to people that in some cases, as we know, Mr. Edwards, they're inconsequential and have not, in some cases, ran a shoeshine shop.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you have a disaster, you know, waiting. Well, it's already happened.
Right. Well, Don, I understand you have asked the Minneapolis Foundation to provide you with the names of individuals who were served and received funds from the $1.375 million that was raised. And you've indicated that they concurred. They will make that list available to the to you specifically, to IBNN and others, so that you can interview some of the victims that were helped. Is that true?
Now, Mr. Edwards, I asked them. They did not say yes or no, but I'm kind of leaning.
Oh, they did?
I think they're kind of leaning to not give me any information. Because I don't know if you know this, Mr. Edwards, but there's a video blogger out there, a company called The Uptake. And they have actually been going into North Minneapolis. And
yeah, I know. I did an interview with them. I know all about them. Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they're talking to a lot of people that are very unhappy. I had a call late Friday night, Mr. Edwards, right off 10 and 26, there is a husband and wife, older, over 55, a daughter and a granddaughter, still living in a tent in the backyard, pooping in a 5-gallon and urinating in a 5-gallon bucket.
Yeah.
And to this day. And so I find that really interesting, and it kind of
Why wasn't this information found out by our navigators, the navigators that are in place and have been in place prior to the 22nd of May? Why was that information not brought forward by them? Because those people have been in that tent since the evening of the 22nd. I saw them as I went through the area that night. But go ahead.
Well, I think that there's a huge breakdown in communication. Because if these people are still in the backyard, which they are, and no one is coming out to them and knocking on their doors, as we heard here, Mr. Edwards, with a gentleman, John Jameson, who actually lives right off of Plymouth Avenue, who was right in the path of the storm, he says no one ever knocked on his door.
Yeah. We'd heard some of that, but Mr. King would not allow that kind of discussion in the meetings, of course. He took a number of actions. In fact, there was a white journalist who had her cameras and everything taken away from her. And in fact, she was actually threatened by a number of members of the group. Let me just go back because you know we don't seem to be getting any calls. So apparently, people are trying to digest. Let me ask you this question: at what point, to the best of your knowledge, was Bruce Bork and the Greater Council of Churches identified as the fiscal agent for short-term operations? Do you remember?
Yes. This was identified, I think, when they first started talking about fiscal agent. And, you know, Bruce Bork was promoted by the NAACP representative, Mr. Alfred Flowers, and the former African American Family Services executive director, Lisa Jones. Who spoke of the village and quoted Martin Luther King and a couple other people quite frequently, and who facilitated a less than a perfect bid process to have Bruce Bork and the Greater Minneapolis Council of Churches be the fiscal agent. But they did not talk about the internal situations going on within the Minneapolis Council of Churches or the depending this departure of their executive director. So that vetting process was very skewed and aloof to those sitting around the table that were in the know.
Okay, because, well, my clear understanding is that actually Bruce Bork's name and the Greater Council of Churches was actually put into play officially and formally on as early as the 8th of June. And I've always been fascinated because I was sitting in the meetings in around the 17th and 18th of June, and folk were playing like they were. That was a discussion that had just begun. That was a discussion that had been put in place also by Mr. Christensen and others as a part of the master plan for gentrification. In fact, it's one of the reasons I think there was a dispute on the morning of the 25th of June at North High School when an African-American woman who actually was an initial participant of the so-called Transparency Committee, was attacked by Mr. Flowers and others because she was raising the wrong kinds of questions from the floor, and there was a heck of a set-to, and she was verbally attacked. And then she was the person that our leader, Mr. King, was pinpointing as having mental health problems.
Yes, exactly. And then
you remember that? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I remember. Okay. And there's something that you said that's very significant. When what are the wrong kind of questions? This is confusing.
I have no idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in the white community, you can ask a question: where the money's at, what happened to the money, and in most cases, 10 times out of 10, you're provided with a cordial diplomatic answer along with the paperwork. In the Hispanic community, same thing. In the Jewish community, same thing. But when we get around to us, Mr. Edwards, and we ask, well, what happened to the money? Can you show me in detail from this date to this date who was paid, how much they were paid, what were they were paid for, and what was the successful measurable outcome from those payments? It's like a 5-alarm fire that has been set off. And it makes absolutely no sense, because that's the way corporate America has operated since day one. You ask for a report, you get a report. When does a report asking for something become hostile? You know? I mean, the federal government has set up, like, I'll give you an example, a good example. Radio station here at KMOJ, okay? They're governed under the rules and regulations of the FCC.
Yeah, I know about it. I was the incorporator of KMOJ. Go ahead.
I can walk in there at any time during business hours and ask them to see a copy of their public file.
Can't get it.
All right. Yeah, well, and they're not supposed to hesitate. Give that file to me and let me review it. Now, if I want copies in there, they can charge me up to, I think, 25 cents a copy. And that's all in, that's a federal regulation through the FCC. But when you walk up there and you ask, because I don't know if you remember, Mr. Edwards, for about a year ago, I was following the empowerment zone from the city board minute. And I was trying to compare them to the KMOJ board minute, because for every reaction by the city or vice versa, you needed an action by the other agency. And both those actions should correlate in the minute. So if you pass to give the Ackerberg Group and Stuart Ackerberg full control of the building, and you somehow turn into a renter when you're supposed to be
We talked about that over a year ago. Hey, Don, you're absolutely on point. Say, man, let's get that phone number again. I'm interested to see if anybody wants to examine us on what we've been saying. We're talking about a design plan that will be unveiled by the mayor of the city of Minneapolis in South Carolina on Wednesday, if you will. It is a plan that will reconfigurate, rechange, and cause to make disappear African Americans. I'm interested in why we haven't received any calls. I thought people would want to have a little bit more information, maybe challenge the authenticity of what it is we're saying. I'm hearing nothing. I'm a little puzzled. Don, get that number again, if you would, please.
Yeah, and we have people in the chat room. It'd be really great if you have a question. You can remain anonymous if you want to. And our number is 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288.
And have them do like they've done for the last year or so. Have them text you. Text you there in your studio. If they've got a question, let's get it on the air. Because I'm amazed at how silent people could be that a plan for the redesign, the reconstructing of North Minneapolis, which is being carried on major wire services around the country as they prepare for the meeting in South Carolina. I'm just amazed, man, that all these folks who say they're heavy hitters and know what's going on and say they're raising money, they're raising money for a community that won't be there. I mean, I really hate to say that, man, and I'm just kind of puzzled on, you know, where is the sense of concern? I won't use the word outrage, not this close to 9/11, but, you know, I'm not understanding, my brother. You know, hey, let's hear from you out there, Twin Cities or across the country. You know, we've got a master plan here, baby, that's in place. It will be unveiled in South Carolina by our beloved our mayor, who just, by the way, has been anointed by the Democratic National Committee as one of its vice chairs. You know, I mean, this man has become an expert on racial regentrification.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something, Mr. Edwards, I had to go back because, you know, I consider you my mentor and the guru and stuff like that. And I heard you a long time ago talk about this. It was years ago, KMOJ days. Martin Luther King had talked about it, and that's kind of where I went to reference it. I think you have referenced it. It's called destructive selfishness. You know, and this is what's going on. Destructive selfishness seeks ruthless ego satisfaction at the expense of others, or self-indulgence at the expense of your own integrity.
Right.
So these people have put a group of black folks, people of our own color, own race, have put another group, another class of the same color and same race in just violent economic situations. Because, you know, what do we have coming up, Mr. Edwards? Wintertime.
Okay, you still got people living in houses here in Minneapolis with tarps on the house. And by the way, the moratorium will go into effect on the 15th of October. We have a moratorium here in Minnesota where, you know, we don't want to cut people off after a certain date. And so the utility companies are out right now looking at the houses that will be cut off. Services will be cut off in the next 10 days. That includes gas, water, electricity, and et cetera. And some folks who thought they were going to get back in their homes, but the repair work hasn't been done, the insurance companies are stalling, and et cetera. Those folks are going to find a situation in which all service, all utility service to their homes will have been terminated, because the by law, utility companies have to terminate all the services before the 15th of October. By the way, that's a part of one of the questions. And by the way, just for the absolute clarity here on this end, the mayor, our beloved mayor, will be attending what is called the Mayor's Institute on City Design Conference in South Carolina. Lord, how much of my mayor going to be down there on the plantation? He's going to tell them, I'm going to repeat it again, he's telling them this is how we're going to make Negroes disappear in Minneapolis. Yes, yes sir. RT right back. Disappointed as a vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. Man, Lord have mercy. We don't need the Tea Party. We got RT right back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. But let's talk a little bit more, Don, because you put these questions to the Minneapolis Foundation, who will pretend that they are going to get you some information. My understanding at this hour is that there are certain documentation which will not be revealed to you or anybody else. It can't be at this particular point because it would expose the recommendations that the mayor will be highlighting in his speech to his and presentation. Actually, it's not a speech, it's a presentation. He's making a formal presentation. I mean, there are white mayors around the country that are ecstatic about what they hear that R.T. Ryback has in place for gentrification in Minneapolis. I mean, man, it's out of sight. But, again, back to our friends at the Minneapolis Foundation. Now, that's right, because what's called it put you out of that meeting. You know, Louis King pointed out there was going to be $600,000 held in reserve for the long-range commitment. I guess that would be the 24-month piece, because you just said earlier in this program that your understanding is, based on the agreements that were signed, Bruce Bork will only be the fiscal agent or facilitating as the controller for the Greater Council of Churches until the end of December. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And so the question, one of many questions, we probably have a list of 30 questions here right now. So who's going to be selected? Do they have an agency, or do they have an entity that they put in place?
I'm talking
in terms of the recovery committee. Do we have some entity that we can put in place, and they will quote unquote send out the money or allocate the money to their friends? I mean, it's clear that when I think about old Governor Perry down there in Texas talking about a Ponzi, my friends, that's what this whole recovery is about. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's been a Ponzi scheme since the evening of the 22nd of May. The night of the tornado. This is a Ponzi scheme, brother.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, big time Ponzi scheme. Go ahead.
And you know, the basis of a Ponzi scheme is like someone gets rich, and the people that need to be served, waiting on it, don't get any. Don't get a thing. And so that's what's happening here. We have a couple of people that are sitting there directing traffic. When I say directing traffic, I mean that they are deciding who's going to get the money, where it's going to go, and they work well with their friends. I had to tell this young lady that we both know, Ms. Edwards, that I'm sick of hearing about the village, because the village is not your inner circle of friends or your white friends.
Okay? Well, let me tell you a question that came up on the village Thursday. A caller called into the village and asked the moderator what had happened to the tornado money. And the moderator, speaking on behalf of the village, said, we shouldn't be bothered talking about that little amount of money. You know, we should be talking about the $400 billion and $400 million and $50 million and $50 billion that white corporations are ripping off. But see, that wasn't his question. He didn't ask about the white corporations like, you know, Exxon or Target or them. He was asking, what happened to the money that the village is sitting on?
Yeah.
And I just, you know, you need to know that the articulator, the orator for the village said that that's not a appropriate question, because there's a lot more money being ripped off. So what that says to me as a longtime historian is that there are some affiliated with this Ponzi scheme, who maintain that there is a level of acceptable corruption and there's a level of unacceptable corruption. So the recovery team, quote-unquote, committee is involved in what has been identified as acceptable corruption. So we need to get our minds right about that. And that was spoken to, quote-unquote, on the Village's radio network on Thursday night there on that station, by the way.
Wow. That's incredible.
Okay. Yeah. So, by the way, the Rio Communications panel of the so-called Northside Community Response Team, do you know who that originally was, who was actually designated and directed to be placed as the Rio Communications Team, the people that really are talking to and feeding information to the Minneapolis Foundation? Do you know who they really are?
I was told that it was Ms. Sandra Samuels, Michelle Martin, both from the Peace Foundation, changed to Northside Achievement Zone, and some people that she picked.
There were three others: Ryan Peterson, Becky Bolin, and radio station KMLJ had been ordered into the equation by Mayor R.T. Ryback and Mike Christensen.
Wow.
Yeah, that again, for anybody that wants to question us here on Point, question this commentator. This is written documentation. Yeah, so that's the actual communications committee. That's the real communications committee as it pertains to the recovery effort, if you will, and it has been the real communications team since day one, since 3 o'clock on the 26th of May in the year of our Lord, 2011. I'm telling you, man, this is wherever my man Bernie Madoff is, I mean, he would be proud. Because this is a heck of a Ponzi scheme that they've run here, okay? We don't seem to be getting any calls. Apparently nobody can get their thoughts together on what to ask. But again, for those that have the hearts, the intestinal fortitude, call your mayor on Monday morning. Ask him to give you a copy, if he can give you an advance copy, of his quote-unquote formal presentation to the Mayor's Design Committee and Institute that will be meeting in South Carolina. I understand. And I'm going to continue to repeat it on this program for the next 50 minutes. The mayor's got the plan, baby. The mayor said he's got the plan, so I know how to get rid of him. Yes, he did. And when I say they, I'm talking about people who look like us. I'm an African-American, okay? He got the plan to get rid of him. And I'm just amazed that everybody is pretending, folks that have been working closely with the mayor and the city and et cetera, who try to pretend that they're not, will try to say that they knew nothing about the design plan. I'm telling you, Mr. Allen, if this ever goes to a federal grand jury, oops,
yeah.
And they start subpoenaing and under discovery, they start asking for the minutes of the meetings that these folk have been in downtown, Lord have mercy. I hope if we got people listening to us right now, I hope y'all's hands are clean.
Yes.
Hope your hands are clean. Yeah, because this is definitely a Ponzi scheme. What else we got, Don?
Well, I would just like to real quick just throw in there that this week, retired 21-year veteran of the Marine Corps, Chris Fields, announced his candidacy to run again for Congress in the 5th Congressional District against Keith Ellison and anybody else.
Yeah, I didn't quite get his whole name. You're breaking up there.
Chris Fields is his name.
Oh,
Chris.
Yeah, okay. Where is he from? How long has he been here?
Well, I think he's been here a couple weeks.
A couple weeks?
Well,
he's going to run for Congress?
He just got here. I'm being facetious, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, I got you. Okay. But he hadn't been here in 10, 15 years, has he?
No, he hasn't been here 10,
15 years. Oh, okay. What kind of issues has he been involved in? What some of the issues he's been on top of?
I'm looking at his website, and he says that, none, really. I mean, phrase in there that he cares about people in North Minneapolis, and North Minneapolis will be taken care of better. And he kind of goes after Congressman Ellison a little bit, saying that he hasn't done anything significant, but that's not any new news, you know?
Does he have a position on all this violence? By the way, the reason I asked that question, 3 stabbed last night at 25th and Nicollet, and all in critical condition. 3 stabbed in our city last night. So the violence continues, and what we're doing now, people are being able to beat the shot spotters. We now have the silent weapons in play. A lot of knife play. A lot of people being stabbed. A lot of people in critical condition because of infections and et cetera. But last night, 25th and Nicollet, three persons stabbed, if you will, in what is a continued raging battle in our city on unsafe streets. Just wanted to pass that on.
Yeah.
So, by the way, any update on the crime thing? You know.
Crime? Oh.
Yeah.
Ever. I'm so glad you said that. Let me grab. I had it sitting here on the back shelf.
Okay, you got again, kind of breaking up, Don. Like I said, but go ahead. I couldn't hear you, but go ahead.
I apologize. I had to walk away from the mic because I had this thing in a file, and I meant to pull it out before the show, but now I'm coming back to the microphone, Mr. Everett. I have a copy. Let me put my glasses back on. I got hold of a copy of CSI Minneapolis, Community Standards Initiative. That talks about this community mobilization for community standards, positive behavior incentive program. Now listen to this.
So that you say that's because you're talking about the CSI piece that came out 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, this is the whole package. It's very poorly written. It's six pages.
Authored by Alfred Flowers, wasn't it?
Yeah, well,
isn't that the name on the front of it as prepared? It says prepared by Al Flowers.
Let me just tell you something, Mr. Edwards. That has been pulled off. The copy that I received from a very good source received it just like he handed it to me. The proposal is, I've never seen plagiarism so bad. Well, I have, but this is just as bad. But what's going on here and the research, I mean, is terrible. Let me read just this one piece here. Under CSI Minneapolis Community Standards Initiative, the Positive Behavior Incentive Program. The Positive Behavior Incentive Program is an effort designed to target young people who deserve to be held up as models of positive behavior at home, in school, and within our community. During year one, the Positive Behavior Incentive Program would work to establish the following goals and objectives. One, reclass young people as pools of talent, sometimes tapped, other times untapped, as opposed to disadvantaged and at-risk individuals. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's it.
Sound like the baby's back. Go ahead.
I had to take him to the studio with me today because, you know, I want him to be doing this in about a year. So.
All right. Hey, man, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Go ahead.
Some dads don't even know where their kids are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this to recast young people as pools of talent, I kind of understand where they're going, but the people that are actually working on this don't have intellectual property to run a shoeshine shop again. And they're going to elicit support from the participation of the Minneapolis Club.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the participation with the Minneapolis Club and school system is going to get, for lack of a better, what do you call that?
Definition?
They're shooting themselves in the foot. Because if right now, Ms. Edwards, everyone is on pins and needles, including Brenda Casales, the Commissioner of Education for the state of Minnesota, all the way down to the administration, the communications department at the Minneapolis Public Schools. Because, you know, 3 weeks ago, the mayor and the commissioner of education tried to get a waiver for the test scores for No Child Left Behind, which means that those test scores are absolutely devastating.
Yeah, and the Federal Department of Education said no, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So when we find out again, Mr. Edwards, for like, what, the eighth or tenth year in a row, I think I've been following it for 3 years solidly. For 3 years, it's failed. So I can say that with confidence. So this is going to be the fourth year where the only schools in the Minneapolis Public School System that have made average yearly progress is going to be Kenwood and Southwest.
Wow.
And so... And another thing they're not factoring is all the kids that left due to the May 22nd tornado. Now, you haven't heard that much about North High. And the communications department at the Minneapolis Public Schools is spending a lot of promotional stuff, like that thing they have with the Minnesota Vikings players and the cheerleaders and this foundation thing that they're going to be doing to kind of get kids a kind of a sporting thing, but they can't go to North High with that because North High, from what I understand, will not field a football team, will not field a baseball team, will not field a soccer team, will not field a tennis team, will not field.
Well, they said that North fielded a football team this week. I mean, today, alleged, I guess. I don't know. Somebody that knows that follows the Minneapolis Public High School, maybe they can tell us if that actually happened. But go ahead, because what your real point here is that the federal government, Secretary Duncan, he's the man who's the head of federal education, Secretary Duncan and them said no. And so, wow, what are we going to do? How are we going to play this game?
Well, I'm also waiting for a report out of Secretary Duncan's office specifically looking at the Minneapolis Public Schools because, you know, the other superintendent before, I think before Bernadier Johnson, her name was Carol Johnson?
Carol was a long time before.
Okay.
But what happened, Bernadier used to work for Carol when Carol Johnson left here. So the people are clear. When Carol Johnson left here to take the superintendency in Memphis, Tennessee, she took Bernadier Johnson with her. Bernadier stayed with her a couple years, and then Superintendent Johnson moved on to Carol Johnson, moved on to become superintendent of the Boston Public Schools. Bernadier came back here as an assistant, quote-unquote, superintendent, if you will, working under an individual that was the so-called superintendent at that time. Because Bernadier has only been the superintendent for about, I don't know, a year and a half. And congratulations again to her. Just got her doctor's degree in May of this year. But go ahead. What was the question?
Well, their Achieve Minneapolis is bringing the former superintendent, Carol, back up here for a $100 a plate talk about the achievement gap downtown at the Depot Hotel. It's going to happen next month. I was looking for the flyer. Don't think I have it in the studio, but we'll definitely have it next week. And
make Stan Allen over there. He's the communications boy over there at the gentleman over there at the public schools. Make him give the date. To refer people. In other words, here at On Point, we refer you to the superintendent's office and to Stan Allen. He's the communications director. Ask him when that $100 a plate dinner is going to be.
Well, let me say, Mr. Edwards, this isn't the Minneapolis Public Schools. This is Achieve Minneapolis. This is, you know, the mayor has his master plan that he's going to take over Minneapolis Public Schools. They were to nominate school board members. And
do it like they do it in New York City, right, where the mayor elects the board, selects the board.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Achieve Minneapolis was created a few years ago. And so with that said, this is not the Minneapolis Public Schools bringing there in, although they can't buck the system or try to walk away from it. They got to be a part of it. I'm sure Stan's no. But this, to me, is them baking a cake for Superintendent Bernadier Johnson. Because of this Achieve Minneapolis. This Achieve Minneapolis has kind of like stepped up. And now they're going to talk about the achievement gap. And that's getting played out because some of us in the know understand that it's not an achievement gap. What it is these teachers are coming in, and they know they're coming to teach poor black or children or people of color, so they don't have any high expectations. So they teach with low expectations. And if the kid fails consistently, they want to blame it on the parents and family. But if you go back to the parents and family, there's no economic opportunity there for them, so you got to come back and look right back at that teacher again. That's why they ought to have a system where they get rid of some of these teachers that aren't having successful outcomes.
That deals with the whole issue of tenure. You know, that's just as important to teachers as it is, Don, to college professors who are tenured.
Yeah,
I'd be careful with that tenure. But, that's interesting. But, hey, Carol Johnson's going to be coming back to give us an idea on why Minneapolis Public Schools are failing. Wow, Jesus. Yeah. Do you have any current update on the declaration by Education Secretary Duncan about Minneapolis, or excuse me, actually, Minnesota's request?
I don't. I'm waiting to hear. I'm signed up for any threads they might send out, but I'm really keeping close track of that, Mr. Everett. So it's important that, you know, the Star and Tribune sanitizes things, and WCCO sanitizes a lot of the news that comes out, and we're And you can look at a press release sometimes for some original sources, and then go to the paper, and it's totally different. It doesn't say what it needs to say. And so hopefully when I receive that information, I can get it out there and let people know and ask for the copy.
Well, here's the reason, though, Mr. Allen, I raised the question is because by law, any action like that has to be on the agenda of the Board of Education, Special School District Number 1. So maybe you and others with that computer competency and capability may want to search immediately to see when that was on the agenda and when did the board vote to authorize the appeal. Oops.
Oh.
Because, you know, the board has been pretty heavy-handed with Bernadier ever since that money got messed up, because there should have been a formal discussion with respect to joining the Commissioner of State Education and asking for that consideration. So was there a discussion? I mean, was Bill English and some of those people who are the defender up? Oh, that's right. Bill English works for United Community Settlements now, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But would he and others have been there and spoken to the yeas and nays, if you will, positives and negatives?
Well, I would hope so, Mr. Edwards. But, you know, we don't know what's going on. But, you know, we just started talking about the schools, Mr. Edwards, and I'm over here in Studio B. I decided that, you know, I was going to pick up my son and put him on my lap, but I also was going to check my email.
And okay, so you got some, right?
Lo and behold, Mr. Edwards, let me tell you what's happening. Monday morning at 9:30 at 807 Broadway, the oversight, the Minneapolis Public Schools new headquarters oversight committee is having a meeting at 9:30 a.m. Yeah, and so to talk about the numbers for the new district headquarters they're building on Broadway Avenue, which we know are bogus.
Well, those numbers are all bogus. I mean, number one, I make that statement sitting here. Number one, the numbers are bogus. Number two, the district has made sure that they have had those previous meetings. Last time we were invited, or at least you were saying given notification to a meeting, was after the January meeting. I know specifically that I was designated as persona non grata, not to have any knowledge of the meetings. So now at 9:30, they're going to have a meeting to talk about the numbers. How are the numbers going to be authenticated?
That's what I'm saying. This is another thing here where we ask, you know, how are the numbers? I mean, how do you find out what the real numbers are? I mean, again, Mr. Harris, to go back to what we talked about.
Oh, Velma Corvell is going to sign off on it. Okay. Minneapolis Civil Rights Department will sign off on them. They'll authenticate them. And then Mortensen's Citizen Committee that was quietly put together over a year ago with some of our black ministers, I guess they'll come in and concur, right?
Well, you know, they usually do that. That's what they do.
Right. Let me say one other thing. I'm going to go back to something. Don't want to lose this because, I see we're not getting any kind of calls. No one is raising any questions. But one of the things you may want to say, because you're the principal person in contact with the Minneapolis Foundation, you know that the numbers that they will formally present. Now, they already have some numbers on their computer website in which they're talking about who they gave money to. But you understand, Mr. Allen, and this is for, you know, those at the Minneapolis Foundation who do listen into this program or call it back on demand, et cetera, because a lot of them are probably watching the Minnesota Gophers play right now. You have to understand that whatever document is issued by the Minneapolis Foundation as it pertains to the tornado relief funds has no legal standing unless there is an asterisk which says that these documents are being presented after appropriate audit.
Exactly.
See, some of your other advisors will tell you that the document has no force of law, if you will, or credibility, unless it indicates that there has been an audit. Now, I would question, based on the timelines, how the Minneapolis Foundation could be able to attest, want to use all the right legal language, how they could attest to the authenticity of the numbers absent an audit. There's been no audit. Also, the Greater Council of Churches, because of the responsibility that they took to handle, because clearly nobody wants to say who handled the $206,000, which was gone by the 9th of June. But Mr. Bork and them must also present a document with a similar declaration, and that is subject, the key word by the big white boys is subject to audit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying to you, Mr. Allen, for the purposes of our discussion next week, if you will, that the documents have to indicate subject to audit. And what that really means is that there already has to be a preliminary audit. And so any questions that you or others may decide to ask within the context of the discipline of audit and under the auspices of the American Auditors and Accountant Association of America, blah, 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 that there has to be a preliminary audit. And there has to be a test model and et cetera. Do you think that that's in place at this hour?
You know what? We had, like I said, they're not giving much information out about anything. And like I said, again, at the top of the hour, we ask for questions. When anyone asks questions who they don't feel comfortable with, when a black person asks questions, they don't want to answer. It's just like Dan Lowenstein and those guys over at the school board. You can ask
about
Dan
Lowenstein. About SES and stuff like that.
Yeah. You can ask them questions. They won't get back to you for months. It's not important. They don't care if they get fined by the Attorney General's office. It's not an issue.
Okay. Well, but what we're playing with here, I mean, the SES money was about $134,000. We're talking here, according to the most official so-called documents, is $1.375 million. In other words, $1,375,000. That's a nice piece of money, particularly given this economy and what's happening and what people are doing and frustrations and et cetera. And so you always indicate that you're going to protect the integrity of your organization and, first and foremost, your articles of incorporation and your bylaws, right? Right? We're familiar with that. By clearly indicating that all of this is subject to audit, and that means there had to be a preliminary audit already. There had to be an attesting. There also had to be a sample kind of situation used by them, which indicated how they would approach authenticating. Because you remember, you were still a member of the committee when we used to hear Louis King and others talk in terms of how everything would be authenticated, and there was no need to entertain any questions from troublemakers like us because there was a system. In fact, at one time, remember, Louis King gave us some documents from OIC dated 2005, which purported to show how they did it at OIC, how he authenticated the numbers.
Yeah.
And the very day I was sitting there, I looked at the numbers, knew they were all bogus,
exactly,
based on what was happening in other kinds of situations involving OIC. But I want to impress that upon our listening audience and yourself is that, you know, this is subject to audit. And one of the questions you may want to ask, because we have the bully pulpit here, is that, we may want to do it as early or have operatives do it as early as Monday morning. What is the timeline for the preliminary subject to audit documentation and authenticating the numbers, and identifying those, sir, because you have asked a hell of a question, and that is, will the Minneapolis Foundation identify to you and other citizens and givers, okay, because you are a giver, you donated, how will that be verified, if you will? How will that be certified, if you will? And what was the sample that was used? Because the reason is, earlier in a discussion in our production meeting, you mentioned to me that the Minneapolis Foundation said that they had the names of the people that you were asking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, I've been looking for quite some time at a series of documents that were obtained via FEMA, because as a part of the appeal on the initial rejection of renters and et cetera, the city of Minneapolis had to provide to FEMA and the federal government the names, addresses, and et cetera of many of the homes that were damaged, be they renter or owned or et cetera. And I would like to see if there is a cross-reference, between the names and addresses given to the federal government and the ones that the Minneapolis Foundation and the Council of Churches will use as a sample authenticating the information subject to audit.
That'd be very interesting to find that out. Mr. Edwards, I hear you loud and clear on my end, and you are broadcasting because I just called up on my cell phone, except I'm I'm not really getting in real good, so I might have to log off and switch computers to the Mac. And so
okay.
just keep going. I just I'm going to ignore
gotcha,
that background.
Gotcha. Go ahead. Okay. What I've just been saying to Mr. Allen is that there is a specific protocol in the United States of America within the respective industries that deal with auditing, which the purpose of an audit, as we all know, is to authenticate the documentation that will be provided for public review, public consumption, blah, 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 blah. We here on this end, particularly through our National Research Institute in California and other entities, have serious reason to believe that there has been fraud and forgery and falsification, if you will, of the numbers and et cetera. And so I was just pointing out to my colleague, Mr. Allen, that I hoped that the Minneapolis Foundation, as big a foundation and as powerful as they are, has done the necessary legwork. In other words, they put in place the necessary protocol to guarantee that when the numbers, even the preliminary numbers, supplemental numbers, are put out there for public consumption, that nobody gets burnt. Because I know that the Minneapolis Foundation has persons on their board of directors who you know, value their reputations and integrity, if you will. And boy, I tell you, the worst thing that you can do and the quickest way to lose your job in any institution or organization is to embarrass your bosses, you know, in this case, Minneapolis Foundation, your board of directors. That's the best way in the world to have your resignation asked for, if you will, or notification go out to the media that you have, quote unquote, left the agency on very short notice. And, you know, reason I laid that out to my colleague, Mr. Allen, was that it's going to be fascinating to see how these figures are going to be matched up, how they're going to be able to actually identify. And by the way, there is a document that was first issued in June and then a supplement on July 6th of 2011, which indicated that a minimum of 2,200 people had been served. If you will, and that all of that had been recorded, if you will, could be authenticated, if you will, and et cetera. And we're at a very crucial point because there's a lot of anger and frustration in our communities with respect to how people have been dealt with and treated as it pertains to the tornado and the results and blah, 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 if you will. And I'm just concerned about the safety of a lot of people right now, because there's a lot of anger out there, and then folks are looking around and seeing, you know, folks who are part of the process, you know, living a good life, driving new cars, if you will, taking trips and vacations and et cetera. And, you know, contrary to what people think, you know, not all black folk are ignorant about what goes on, and they have their own kind of intelligence network, if you will, that allows them to kind of peek in, just like the system peeks in on them. They're able to peek in on folks working for the system. And so I just have to say, I hope my colleague, Mr. Allen, is back with us here. We've had some technical difficulties for whatever reason. Apparently he was texted by someone who clearly indicated that we're continuing to have technical difficulties for the second week in a row. And then also he probably, God bless him, had to tend to the baby. But right now, what it is, we've been trying to see if we could get any callers out there that had any questions for us. I don't know if our switchboard is operational to receive a call, but again, the number 1-877 or 877-572-4288. 877-572-4288. I'm co-host Ron Edwards. We're having
we're back live.
All right. Mr. Allen is back with us. Anything on the text message? Anyone texting us anything, Don?
Nope.
Because we've laid out some pretty indictable declarations and statements. I know that, you know, behind our back, or while, you know, some of us are not around, people will say that that's just a bunch of garbage stirring up a bunch of doo-doo, things like that. So are you getting any text messages? Anyone contesting what we're saying?
I am not. I'm sitting here on the switchboard because if someone would have called in, I could have answered the line easily and let you talk to them, you know.
Wow. What a sad day. What a sad day for a once great community. that no one has any questions with respect to the monies and et cetera, if you will. I just want to repeat this in that folks want to give us, that kind of BS, that, that the information is not accurate. Again, Mr. Allen and I sat. Mr. Allen, in fact, there were some pictures taken while we were there. Mr. Allen and I sat in a meeting at Heritage Park down there on the 9th of June, 2011. We heard representatives from Thor and the so-called minority contractors, Vicky Norman and Tim Campbell. We heard them tell black contractors that no money had come in yet, that they were paying everything out of their pockets, but they would be reimbursed. And I got to tell you, Don, those guys had already gone through $206,000.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Which, as you know, as a member of at that time into your expulsion, that was never reported to the committee?
No, not one.
And I've seen a document that has emerged in the last couple of days which makes it an attempt to make it appear that there was a discussion about the $206,000.
Yeah, there was nothing like that at all. Nothing at all.
No. They're back. They're documents are now being backdated and et cetera. And it's just unbelievable, because what basically has happened is at least $500,000, if not maybe $700,000, has gone into the pockets of individuals. By the way, how did Ezell Jones and them do on their big event down at the Met? They were going to raise thousands and thousands of dollars and thank. Has there been any report from them?
No. I mean, I have
no report from Big Ezell and his entities. And what was that, Minnesota Cares or Minneapolis Cares or We Care. Right. Has there been any update? I mean, was any check given to the Minneapolis Foundation in support of the tornado recovery?
All I can say is that I have not seen anything. I have not heard of anything. I have not seen a physical report on anything. And so I just can't answer that, to tell you the truth, because I don't know what the hell, is going on or what they're.
Well, I can remember how big this thing was going to be. I can remember all the quiet and almost secret talks that were going on. And I mean, I won't go into specific details. Don't want to make anybody upset with us, but I can remember at one point, they were talking about Prince, and then they were talking about Jason, whatever his name is. And
Bieber. Yeah, Jason Bieber. I remember.
Yeah,
that.
Jason Bieber. My man, Jason Bieber, and those numbers are going to come in, and then they looked up and they found out that Janet Jackson was coming in on the 19th, so it was pushed back to the 20th. But I know of some victims that were expecting that with this new infusion, that how, as an outgrowth of how they were missed the first time around, that somebody would be able to help them out the second time around. But I guess what happened, a lot of money was diverted to fix up people's houses who were members of the core group or stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Now, I know I can be expelled. I will probably be expelled for making that particular statement, if you will. But, one really doesn't care. But I mean, how much money is enough money to rip off?
Yeah, I mean, I can't answer that question. They keep doing it, Mr. Evers. They keep getting away with it. I mean, it's a great hustle if you get into it, but hell, I mean, shouldn't someone? I mean, even the mobsters in New York, Mr. Evers, they make sure some people, little people, get it taken.
Well, that's what the mafia was all about. I mean, that's the code of the Sicilian, if you will. Mafia founded in Sicily, if you will. And you're absolutely right, Don. I mean, at least the little people get something to maintain loyalty.
You get the loyalty. You just get a little taste of something, and you keep your mouth shut because you're happy. In this case, these people have just went downright berserk and said, we're not giving no one nothing. Louis King, quote, we're not here to put nothing in your pocket.
Now, let me ask this question. Don, I've got to ask this question for the purpose of transparency, to get things to really move and rocket. I understand that one of the reasons that Bruce Bork and the Greater Council of Churches were allowed to, notice the word, allowed to justify not issuing the checks. Am I correct, Don? Maybe you can't speak to it, but it needs to be known. Am I correct that the powerful Transparency Committee and the core group demanded the personnel file of all individuals involved with these agencies in tornado relief?
Exactly. They wanted personnel
but
files.
What legal authority does the – I mean, I know the RCT or whatever is powerful, but they actually demanded the personnel file of individuals working for these agencies in exchange for getting their checks?
Personnel files, job descriptions, I mean, the whole – I was like, wow. I mean, they're not even – you know, well, we don't know if they've registered with the state or corporations or anything, but they don't even have that authority.
Well, that's what I said when this information first came through legal sources, if you will. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, how do you have that power, man? I mean, is that something? Is there some legislative assembly in the village that could do that?
Do we
have a parliament or something in the village, or a council of elders who have elected themselves? I mean. That is awesome, man. You know, you give me the list and the personnel files and job descriptions, or we will not send you your money.
That's pretty interesting, you know, how we kind of stuff with village. People in the village who are stay there, you know,
otherwise. Wow. Now, also, I'm hearing an ugly, ugly rumor from sources off some of the boards. Do we have some agencies, you mentioned them actually at the top of the program, do we have some agencies who are indicating they want out of the powerful community or the Northside relief that they want out, and are they conveying that to the funding source, the Great Minneapolis Foundation? I mean, what the heck is going on?
Well, what's happening, Mr. Edwards, is there's the three of the big ones, which is the Neighborhood Hub, Pillsbury United Community, and also Shiloh with Pastor Betty up there. I got this from a confidential source, and I always keep my sources confidential. But
well, wait a minute. We'll be short on that. Pastor Betty is at Kwanzaa, isn't she? Because that's Bishop Howe. We mustn't disrespect Shiloh. Shiloh
okay.
is the powerful Bishop Howe, you said.
Okay, but they're working with coordination with Shiloh. And
okay.
Their hub, where the Navigators. Shiloh has
Okay,
Navigators.
So you got Pillsbury United, the hub, and Shiloh are talking in terms they want out, right?
Yeah, they're tired of this. They're just sick and tired, and they just don't want to deal with this nonsense anymore.
Wow. Okay. Well, how much money, just you and I talking here over the air with people, I mean, how much money do you think was really, because we had a young man by the name of Eric Rutherford who maintained in a series of communications, et cetera, that he received like $4,500 personally from the leadership. Now, did that come out of somebody's pocket, or because that couldn't have come out of the money because everybody's saying they haven't got the money yet, right?
Yeah.
Except for the $206,000.
Yeah, exactly. So he's saying that it was approved. Here's what he told me. He said, and I saw the receipt. He said he got the money. It was approved by the core team with checks issued from one entity, he wouldn't tell me, and another half from Emerge.
Okay, Emerge being a nonprofit Northside agency headed by Michael Wynn, who maintained that he wasn't aware of that initially, right?
Yeah.
And he was the leader of all the jobs that the African-American youth got, right? What was it, 150, 200, 300, 500?
It might have been 1,000. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I thought it was a T-shirt chain.
Okay.
Oh, I thought
So Mr. Rutherford has confirmed that he certainly received, via the core group, $4,500, okay? And then there was some additional money, but nobody wants to talk about it. So I stay confused in a situation like this, because have they paid the money out or haven't they paid the money out? And when Louis King a month ago said we're sitting on $600,000, is that what he meant or what?
Yeah, I haven't seen any checks or balance sheets or anything like that, Mr. Edwards. All I know that they have not given full disclosure. And that's what I can say. I mean, I think President Obama would be ashamed of it, okay? You know, President Obama puts everything on a website. You can track every penny. And these guys are, and they're not even answering questions. Believe me, Mr. Edwards, I mean, I'm calculative, And so if I call them and they don't give me information, I got a white friend downtown who happens to be an attorney, okay? I asked him, I said, hey, can you call this guy here? I'm going to give you his cell phone number and his office number.
Okay.
Here's what I want you to ask him. I want you to ask him who's in charge, cutting checks. How many people have they served? Are the people's lives better than they were before the tornado? How much money year to date have you paid out individuals through the agencies, and where are those reports at? Can we find them online? Okay? So him being an attorney, he's ready for the first couple questions that are going to come out of Mr. King's mouth. The first one's going to be, well, who are you?
Right.
Me. Well, who are you with? Well, I'm an attorney with so-and-so and so-and-so. This is some Don Allen stuff that came out of me. And
that same thing he told Randy first in the Star Tribune when he, as he pointed out, and he's on video saying that he had shut the Star Tribune down. That's why the Star Tribune doesn't make any deep inquiries anymore about the tornado relief. Yeah, I remember that. I remember, man, Mr. King, he made the Star Tribune close it down. So he told the attorney it was just some Don Allen BS, and he wasn't going to answer any of the questions.
Exactly.
Okay. Exactly. Well, that's a good tactic. That's a military tactic. That's what we teach them down at Fort Leavenworth and at the military college. Oops. But anyways, wow. Well, now, these are some of the similar questions, Don, as we begin to reach the end of today's program. These are some of the questions that you've asked the Minneapolis Foundation. I mean, I want to be clear for our listening audience. We've got pretty good reception now. That you were told that they would have this information by the middle of the month, which is next week, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yep, that's what they said.
I mean, that's what they said. Not agree. I mean, that's what they said.
That's what they said. They'll have some time until next week. And you tell me what day.
Okay. And so the general public and many of the victims of North Minneapolis will have a chance to know that and weigh it, but also they have a chance. I can't let it get away, Don. I mean, you know, apparently people are going to pretend they didn't know that the mayor is unveiling the plan for the redesign and revision of North Minneapolis and the Negro community. Man, that's out of sight.
I know.
Still got you with us, Don? Okay.
I'm right here. I'm listening.
Okay. So this is in play. And, man, I repeat again for our audience that are with us is that, and I tell you what to do. I'm going to make a commitment, Don, here on my Sunday program tomorrow to go back and really revisit this and really encourage people to call the mayor's office before, you know, he gets on the plane to fly to South Carolina and, you know, enjoy the leisure of the Atlantic Ocean and et cetera, that at least they be given copies of the design plan that he'll be presenting to his fellow mayors at the Mayor's Design Institute Conference in South Carolina, okay? Because, man, I got to tell you, I would like to officially see the redesign plan.
Yep.
Now, I've seen some military-style satellite images. Oops, I hate to say that, but I have. And I've always had the feeling that that the redesign plan will be centered around where the heaviest concentration of damage was during the terrible events of 22 May 2011. So I just, you know, myself, I'd like to, you know. You think we'll be invited to any kind of public meeting by our state representatives and et cetera to view the redesign plan?
I highly doubt it, Mr. Irwin. I highly doubt it.
Well, this is kind of disheartening because we even almost sound disheartening to some extent. I mean, is there no avenue of appeal for our beloved community? Or are we just going to be redesigned out of...
I don't know how we can get to the point of them actually supplying information to the general public. You know, I mean, how would you ask? If the people who are in charge don't feel like it's not necessary or they're inconsequential because... We are because they don't feel that it's necessary. I mean, who are they giving the information to? Now you call Minneapolis Foundation, and they're like deer in the headlights. They're going, what have we created? They've created a Frankenstein.
So
how do they can? Their Frankenstein is already terrible to them up, because I'm telling you, I'm probably going to be nice and ask one more time. I mean, I have the email addresses and the contact information for everyone in the board of directors of the Minneapolis Foundation. And I don't mind shooting out a mass email at all whatsoever.
Well, that's what we said when you took the technical break there, Mr. Allen, that I, you know, I'm encouraging, as a longtime veteran of our beloved city, that I just think that the Minneapolis Foundation Board of Directors must step to the plate and make sure that they ask the questions. Because, you know, as I said just minutes ago, one of the quickest ways to end your career and lose your job in institutions like that is to embarrass your bosses. You got a lot of folks up there on that board at the Minneapolis Foundation, mm-hmm. take great personal pride in their integrity and their reputation. And they don't like to get caught on something like this. When you talk about, you know, deers in a headlight, they don't want to get caught on this. And it's clear to me, based on what you said your conversation was with the representative, powerful, high-ranking representative of the Minneapolis Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation doesn't have any intention of coming clean, if you will. And they are powerful. Their board is powerful. They have powerful people on their board. They have a long, rich history in the philanthropic community here in the Twin Cities and throughout the state of Minnesota and other places. And, boy, I just don't know how we're going to deal with this, because I'm told by reliable sources, as the design plan was being put in place, that one of the operational pieces was to make sure that, first of all, there'd be no leak, and secondly, if inquiry or protest was made, that it would be controlled.
Yeah,
it would be controlled. And I think the designees are already in place, and oftentimes we've talked about them since the 28th of May, when we committed ourselves here on point to talk in terms of the devastation, which had happened just 6 days before. You remember that, Mr. Allen? And we talked about it, and we talked about transparency, and we hope that, you know, because there had already been meetings going on, we were aware. And, boy, I just thought that the Minneapolis Foundation was going to do the right thing on behalf of, you know, the African-American community and those affected. But I guess I was mistaken. I guess I was hoping for too much.
Yeah. Yeah, we always, you know, there's reality and there's expectation. I think that we always get hit with the reality once or twice.
Yeah, Jesus, that's really too bad. Well, anyways, I just want to indicate, I noticed tomorrow the Minnesota Vikings, by the way, the Gophers are losing. They'll blame it on the black quarterback, DeMarcus Gray. But anyways, the Minnesota Vikings open their season in San Diego tomorrow. So hear me say something I find peculiar. I know that Mr. Allen, my colleague, is not much on sports, but I cannot understand how Chad Greenway became more important and more relevant as opposed to the top running back, along with Brother Johnson in Tennessee, Adrian Peterson. I just thought, Don, it was really disrespectful to indicate that Adrian Peterson was being put on the back burner as it pertains to contract negotiations. And the Vikings then made Chad Greenway, a South Dakota farm boy via the University of Iowa, the highest paid linebacker in the NFL, and said that they'd get to Adrian Peterson a little bit later on. I just don't know how you do that, other than I hate to think that race was another factor.
Mr. Edwards, I'm going to surprise you, because when they made that white boy the franchise player like that, I saw the news report on TV, and I was thinking about you, because, you know, like you said, I don't really follow a whole lot of sports, but it was peculiar, as a layman or someone that, you know, likes to watch football but doesn't really understand the politics. Well, yeah, I do understand politics, but
why
this hillbilly franchise player when you got Adrian Peterson, who's done tons of philanthropic stuff here in the city, who should be a franchise player for the Minnesota Vikings, unless they have future plans to bump him somewhere else. It wasn't a move that made any sense. And again, it's like the Lynx, I mean, not the Lynx, but the Timberwolves, when, you know, we had Kevin Garnett, they shipped him off to Boston. What happened?
That's right.
Boston, okay?
Yeah.
Randy Moss, shipped him off. Super Bowl, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely on point. And by the way, there was at least one other player beside Adrian Peterson, in my estimation, and I don't apologize. I've been a sports expert, been around for a long time, and that was Kevin Williams, the outstanding defensive tackle. I found it rather interesting that he wasn't considered to be a franchise tag. Based on the new changes in policies and a 10-year CBA, which I maintain was a mistake by the leadership of the Players Association, in other words, the executive staff, 10 years is too long, too much, gives the owners too much leverage. But how in the heck do you ignore Adrian Peterson first, Kevin Williams second, and talk in terms of Chad Greenway as a franchise player? You know what I mean? Now, here's my prediction. I don't think they're going to be able to re-sign Adrian Peterson. So I just think that, you know, all the Minnesota Viking faithful need to get ready for it, okay? I don't think they're going to be able to re-sign him, Mr. Allen. I really feel that. But I had to kind of get that in on the program, in that I assume a lot of our people are, quote-unquote, watching the sports and football and not even understanding that as we speak, our beloved mayor and his staff are putting together the final touches for the disappearance of the African-American from the city of Minneapolis. Man, that's Titanic. You know what I'm saying, Don? That is Titanic, baby. You're talking about black folk who will, in their lifetime, not see their right of return acted on and will be told to move on. Ooh. Yes, sir. Those who were displaced by the tornado will be told to keep on moving.
Yeah, I am looking for the story so I can post it up online on the Star Tribune. State law Mike Cortell tax testimony?
That's right. That's where they buried it. That was a slick move by the Star Tribune. Star Tribune buried it in that story. That's where they buried it. And the reason that they had to confirm it, because obviously the reader would ask the question, well, why would they convene a meeting and then have to recess it? Because the mayor failed to meet the deadline for issuing his budget. And they got caught in a situation where, first of all, they moved it to Tuesday, and then they have to recess the meeting, okay, because by law they cannot conduct business as it pertains to issues of taxation within a particular window. It's there in the story. But in the story, they said, oh, yeah, and by the way, the mayor will be going to South Carolina. See, I wondered how they were going to deal with that, how they were going to report that. When I was told that it was in this morning's edition of the paper, I said, oh, my, let me, and there it was. And I said, well, here it is. And but as I said before, we're running out of time, Don, until next Saturday. But, man, you'd be surprised at how many of your folks, quote, unquote, knew about it.
Wow.
Yes, sir. They knew about it. Yes, they did. So, hey, tomorrow we'll certainly talk a little bit more about it on our Sunday radio program. And by the way, just for the listening audience, our Sunday TV program, we will be talking in terms of one of the most controversial lawsuits that is emerging, and that is the lawsuit brought by Lieutenant Lee Edwards against the Minneapolis Police Department. Yes, sir. We'll be going into great detail with respect to what it is Lieutenant Edwards has uncovered. But go ahead, Don, why don't you finish it up, man? We out of here.
Okay, yeah. We're just going to play a little salute because tomorrow's 9/11, and we just think we'll close with Ray Charles, America.
My man.
Keep that same
All
track.
Right. All right. America.
once in 2 weeks of singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber